90.7 KPFK, Los Angeles.
If you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11.
Most of 11, the and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you're going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to the broadcast from Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is the broadcast as heard apparently sometimes on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, rainy, flooding Seattle. Please be careful out there. Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also are heard streaming coast to coast and around the globe on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from BradBlog.com. Sorry we were late coming in there. Problem with the microphones here in the studio at KPFK. Desi is going to be working on that while I try to work on the show. This is likely to be a very different program than I had otherwise planned for today, as this was to be our last show until after the new year, at least when we will be able to open the phones to our live listeners. Not our last broadcast of the year, but the last chance we'll have to take some of your calls. I had previously planned or hope to hear from folks about their own hopes and wishes and, yes, concerns at the end of the tumultuous year that we have had as we move from 2025 into 2026, with, at least for me, a renewed sense of optimism in recent weeks, at least until this past weekend. I should say I still have the optimism, but boy, this last weekend has been a blow. Despite those disturbing events of the past weekend, which we need to talk about. Oh, I think I just lost a little bit of volume here, Wendell, if you can pipe me back up there. I want to still try to open the phones to some of you who I suspect may have thoughts to share, particularly out here in Hollywood, where the broadcast is based. I'm still looking toward 2026 with both trepidation and hope for numerous reasons. But given what we are covering today, well, we'll get there. For those of you who are in our live Southern California listening area today, or listening anywhere out there around the world via our kpfk.org web stream, I will try to get to as many calls as I can today before the clock runs out on the horrors of 2025 at 818-985-5735. We're also nearing the end of our winter fun drive here at KPFK, our end of year fun drive at my flagship station in LA. So when you call in at 818-985-KPFK, if you'd like to join me on air, please hit button number one. And if you are able to help this station out with a donation to help us continue our independent voice into the new year, please dial the same number, but hit button number two to pledge any amount you may be able to afford at year's end. After a year in which the media, particularly publicly funded independent stations like this one, and the many other such stations around the country who share the broadcast with you every day, you probably know by now that those stations are under direct assault from some very powerful forces out there demanding that we, the people, stand up, frankly, and support stations like KPFK and or the one that you may be listening to the show on anywhere around the nation today. Desi, let me know if they get any, if you have any luck with that microphone. I will come in and move into there when we do. In the meantime, it was an exceptionally violent, tragic weekend, including the shocking murder of legendary actor, writer, director, producer, and political activist Rob Reiner and his wife on Sunday, which we will get to, and welcome your calls about, because I know a lot of we have a lot of folks in the community here in Hollywood who knew Rob Reiner, who worked with him. I would love to hear from you with your memories, especially if so. I think that bell indicates the mic out there is now working.
Sadly.
Oh, it does not? All right. You guys keep working. I'll keep doing the radio show. In any event, that killing on Sunday night has shocked us here in L.A. I know folks across the country and the world are reeling today from that news. But the extraordinary violence was not just here in L.A. over the weekend, not just here in the U.S., frankly, but around the world. On Saturday, two U.S. soldiers, members of the Iowa National Guard, and a civilian interpreter were killed in Syria in an ambush reportedly by a lone gunman identified as a member of ISIS, according to the U.S. Central Command, or CENTCOM. U.S. officials said that three other service members were injured in the attack as well, during which the gunman was, quote, engaged and killed. Syria's state news said that two Syrian service personnel were also injured. Donald Trump pledged on social media that there would be, quote, a very serious retaliation in response. The president of Syria sent condolences to the American president following the attack. On Monday, the U.S. Army identified the two soldiers killed in the attack as Sergeant Edgar Brian Torres Tovar, 25 years old, and Sergeant William Nathaniel Howard, age 29. The name of the civilian interpreter has not been released as of airtime. While CENTCOM described the attacker as a member of ISIS, a Pentagon official said initial assessments showed the attack was, quote, likely to have been carried out by the Islamic State group. So more details needed there. The UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said the attacker was a member of the Syrian Security Force. I suppose he could have been a member of ISIS as well. No group to date has claimed responsibility for the attack, and the identity of the gunman has not been released. The United Nations says the ISIS group still has between 5,000 and 7,000 fighters in Syria and Iraq. U.S. troops have maintained a presence in Syria since 2015 to help train other forces as part of a campaign against the group. Pentagon officials said over the weekend that the attack remains under investigation and that, quote, this attack took place in an area where the Syrian president does not have control. Meanwhile, on the other side of the world, officials in Australia today are pledging new restrictions on the civilian purchase of military-style weaponry following an horrific gun massacre on the first night of the Jewish holiday of Hanukkah in Sydney. Two gunmen opened fire during the Hanukkah celebration on Sydney's Bondi Beach, killing 15 people, including a child, officials said on Monday in what Prime Minister Anthony Albanese called an act of anti-Semitic terrorism that struck at the heart of the nation. The shooters, authorities said, were father and son. The massacre at one of Australia's most popular beaches followed a wave of anti-Semitic attacks that have roiled the country over the past year. It was the deadliest shooting in almost three decades in a country with already very significant strict gun control laws. One gunman, a 50-year-old man, was fatally shot by police. The other shooter, his 24-year-old son, was wounded and was being treated at a hospital, according to the New South Wales Police Commissioner. Those killed were reportedly between the ages of 10 and 87 years old. At least 42 others being treated at hospitals were being treated at hospitals as of Monday morning. Quote, what we saw yesterday was an act of pure evil, an act of anti-Semitism, an act of terrorism on our shores in an iconic Australian location, Bondi Beach, that is associated with joy, associated with families gathering, associated with celebrations. That, according to Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese on Monday, it is forever tarnished, he said, by what has occurred. The violence erupted at the end of a summer day when thousands had flocked to Bondi Beach, an icon of Australia's cultural life. Hundreds had gathered for the Hanukkah by the Sea event, celebrating the start of the eight-day Jewish holiday festival. Chabad, an Orthodox Jewish movement that runs outreach worldwide and sponsors events during major Jewish holidays, identified one of the dead as Rabbi Ilan Schlanger, the assistant rabbi at Chabad of Bondi and an organizer of the event. None of the victims had been publicly named by Australian authorities as of Monday morning. The gunmen haven't been officially named either. Separate gruesome footage showed two men in black shirts firing with long guns from a footbridge leading to the beach. One dramatic clip broadcast on Australian television showed a man appearing to tackle and disarm one of the gunmen. That man, identified by relatives to Australian media as a fruit shop owner named Ahmed Al Ahmed. He is now being hailed as a hero, though a number of social media accounts attempted to create a fake persona of a white IT professional as the man who courageously disarmed one of the gunmen. Not just social media accounts, but actually Elon Musk's fake, artificial intelligence named Grok was reporting that this guy who tackled one of the shooters and disarmed him was actually a white IT professional with a name who does not actually exist. The importance of media that you can trust these days. Artsin Ostrovsky, a lawyer attending the Hanukkah ceremony with his wife and daughters, was grazed in the head by a bullet. He said he moved from Israel to Australia 2 weeks ago to work for a Jewish advocacy group. Quote, what I saw today was pure evil, he said. Just an absolute bloodbath, bodies strewn everywhere, he told AP in an email from the hospital. I never thought that would be possible here in Australia, he said. Authorities were not looking for anyone else in connection with the massacre, though police pledged a, quote, thorough investigation. Two improvised explosive devices were also found at that scene in Australia before bomb experts were able to render those devices safe. They were described as rudimentary devices that would have been needed to be detonated by a wick rather than a phone or electronically. New South Mayor's Premier Chris Minns said there would, quote, be almost certainly be gun law changes after the massacre. Contrast that, of course, with the seemingly endless series of mass shootings back here in the U.S., after which no action is taken by lawmakers to try and make such massacres more difficult or at least less frequent. In fact, such killings in recent years have resulted in Republican lawmakers making military-style assault weapons easier to obtain and carry, even for folks with mental issues, rather than make it harder for that to happen. We received another grim reminder about that on Saturday here in the U.S. A shooter dressed in black killed at least two people and wounded nine others at Brown University on Saturday in Rhode Island during final exams on the Ivy League campus. That according to authorities and police, as of Monday, as we go to air, are still searching for the gunman. 3 days on. The victims were all reportedly students. The suspect was identified only as... Whoop, I heard something there, by the way. If you adjusted... I suddenly heard something in the other room there, by the way. Don't know if that is a good idea or a bad idea. You guys will let me know if that's the case. All right. Well, the suspect has, in the meantime... sorry, this is all going on around us at the same time. I did hear... let me tell you, I did hear some noise when Wendell was hitting that box up there, my friend. Wendell, that box on up there. When you hit something back there, I heard some noise. There we go. I am now hearing. Yep, I'm hearing Desi.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. So that's the problem. I'll be in there in a minute. All right. The suspect was identified only as a man in dark clothing at Brown University. He was last seen leaving the engineering building where the attack happened. Security footage showed the man walking away from the building, but his face was not visible. Within just the past few minutes, I see that other that news outlets are reporting that new video of the suspect has now been released. Some witnesses reported that the man, who could be in his 30s, may have been wearing a camouflage mask. The unthinkable has happened, said Democratic Rhode Island Governor Dan McKee, who vowed that all resources were being deployed to catch the suspect. In truth, the shooting at Brown University was quite thinkable, in fact, while the horrific attack in Australia might have been unthinkable to some. Attacks like the one that happened over the weekend in Rhode Island happened just about every day at this point in this country. As The Guardian observed on Sunday, while the deadly attack unfolded at Brown University, leaving students hiding under desks and reeling as gunshots rang out, the scene was eerily familiar to at least two students in Rhode Island at that shooting years earlier. 21-year-old Maya Tretta and 20-year-old student Zoe Weissman had both survived previous school shootings. As Weissman told the New York Times, quote, "What I've been feeling most is just like, how dare this country allow this to happen to someone like me twice." She was in her dorm room at Brown when a friend called to warn her that a shooting was underway. Her initial feelings of panic soon turned to anger. She told NBC, "I'm angry that I thought I'd never have to deal with this again," she said. "And here I am 8 years later," she told NBC. She was just 12 years old when she witnessed a shooting at the high school adjacent to her middle school in Parkland, Florida. The 2018 shooting that left 17 people dead. Tretta was shot in the abdomen in 2019 when a 16-year-old opened fire at Saugus High School near Los Angeles, killing two people, including her best friend at the time. Saturday's attack has again cast a spotlight on more longstanding calls for gun safety laws here in the U.S., where gun laws rank among the most permissive in the developed world. So far, this year alone, in 2025, there have been 389 mass shootings across the U.S. According to the Gun Violence Archive, which defines incidents where four or more victims have been shot as a mass shooting. Last year, in 2024, more than 500 mass shootings were reported. Quote, "The one thing that gave me comfort," said Weissman, "was, like, statistically, it's practically impossible," she said, "for this to ever happen to me again." And clearly, she noted, "we're getting to a point where no one can say that anymore." She is right. And our friend, I will note, independent national security journalist Marcy Wheeler of Empty Wheel pointed out over the weekend on social media, she said, quote, "since we're discussing the two Brown students who survived earlier school shootings, remember that Kylie Osage survived the Oxford school shooting in 2021 at the Oxford High School in Michigan and the 2023 shooting at Michigan State University as well." Marcy also noted, "they aren't the only one. Owen Robinson survived both the Michigan State school shooting and the shooting that took place in April of this year at the student union at Florida State University in Tallahassee. On Sunday, FBI Director Cash Patel, who is becoming known as Keystone Cash, proudly tweeted out that the suspect in Brown University, in the Brown University shooting, had been taken into custody. He was identified by name as a 24-year-old white Army veteran from Wisconsin. He had reportedly served as an infantry soldier in the U.S. Army, where he passed sniper training, had experience with firearms instruction, and had served as a rifleman between 2021 and 2024. No sooner had he been named as the suspect in the Brown University shooting than people online began describing him as someone with a troubled past and a victim of mental health issues, leading some on social media to post a meme that reads, quote, "if the shooter turns out to be Hispanic, quote, build the wall. If the shooter turns out to be Arab, quote, ban Muslims. If the shooter turns out to be black, quote, BLM are terrorists. But if the shooter turns out to be white, quote, we need to ask ourselves, how are we as a society failing these poor, troubled young men? What kinds of movies, video games, and music are we making?" Yeah. When a white guy does it, it's mental health issues. Everyone else, well, you get the idea. As it turns out, however, after that man had been named and shamed, thanks in no small part to the director of the FBI, after he had been interrogated for hours, he was, in fact, released by authorities on Sunday night. Authorities who said that they are now back to square one in that investigation and, in fact, as I noted, have put out new video of the suspect in this case that they are now looking for and offering, I think, a $50,000 reward. Saying the, quote, "evidence now points in a different direction," law enforcement officials said late on Sunday that he had been the suspect had been released in detention with that shooting. The Rhode Island Attorney General at a hastily convened news conference last night said, quote, "sometimes you go in one direction and then you have to regroup," explaining why the person of interest was subsequently released. So as we go to air, that manhunt continues now for the shooter following the carnage of what was the 75th school shooting in the U.S. this year. All right, let me take a quick break here and we will come back now with the story, the tragic news back here in Los Angeles in a killing that I think it's fair to say has absolutely stunned certainly all of us out here in Hollywood, Southern California, and but I think the nation and indeed the world, if the outpouring via social media last night on Sunday and into today has been any indication. Quick break so we can adjust our studios here. Des, we got the microphones in there fixed?
Yes, we do.
All right. No. I'll be in there with the bad news and maybe with your calls. If you have thoughts on any of this, what we can look forward to in 2026, as I had originally hoped to cover. And, of course, this tragic death of Rob Reiner and his wife on Sunday. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Hit button number one to do that. We will be right back with you after a quick break.
818-985-5735 is the number to call. You are listening to the broadcast right here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. If you appreciate this content, if you appreciate Brad and his show right here, and you listen to it, call now and pledge your support for this program that we could stay on the air. And every contribution counts, and it keeps KPFK on the public airwaves. Keep it on the airwaves for the folks that can't afford to pledge. And that's at any amount, $50, $75, $100 pledge. It all counts, and especially for this program right here, that we can give you this information that's happening as we speak.
And we can do it on microphones that work here in the studio. Thank you very much, Gary Baca.
I can hear you.
Yes, I know. It's a miracle. It's a Christmas miracle, frankly.
That's right.
Hey, well, Gary, thank you for jumping in to help us get through that, whatever that technical issue was about. I'm sure someone will explain it to me after the show. In the meantime, as you heard Gary say, 818-985-5735 is our phone number. 818-985-KPFK. Please give us a call. Help us out here at year's end to stay on your public airwaves. As you can tell, we could use all the support we can get. And for the next, half hour or so, you can call in, pledge $65, and you can receive your choice of a KPFK coffee mug or a KPFK t-shirt as well. This just hot off the presses. A new book from Tom Hartman, The Last American President, A Broken Man, A Corrupt Party, and A World on the Brink. I have no idea what that could possibly be about.
Yeah, who's he talking about?
I have no idea. Buy the book and find out.
And this is his latest book as well. So,
folks, hot off the presses, I have yet to read it even.
Yeah. So let's go to the phone lines. Go to the phones right now and pledge your support for the broadcast. And that $100 pledge gets you The Last American President by Tom Hartman, or get the grocery tote bag, $50 donation. But pledge your support right now.
And if you're listening to our show via podcast, we have a big listenership via podcast. Please go to kpfk.org, pick out any of the thank you gifts that we have offered to help the broadcast, KPFK, and Pacifica Radio stay on your public airwaves. And now, back to the broadcast. It's the Bradcast, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. That is the theme to Rob Reiner's 1995 romantic political comedy drama, The American President, directed by Reiner and written by Aaron Sorkin with Michael Douglas and Annette Bening, said to have been the inspiration for Sorkin's West Wing television classic. Welcome back to the Bradcast, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Nick Reiner, the son of the renowned actor, director, writer, and producer Rob Reiner, was in police custody on Monday after the discovery on Sunday of the gruesome stabbing death of his father and mother, Michelle Singer Reiner. Online jail records show that the 32-year-old Nick Reiner was booked by LA police and remained in jail on Monday on charges related to the apparent murder, which really has rocked Hollywood and indeed the nation today. Rob and Michelle Reiner were found dead on Sunday at their home in Los Angeles, and investigators believe they suffered stab wounds. The LA Fire Department said it responded to a medical aid request shortly after 3:30 p.m. on Sunday and found a 78-year-old man and a 68-year-old woman dead inside. Reiner turned 78 just in March of this year. Reiner was long one of the most prolific directors in Hollywood. His work included some of the most memorable movies of the 1980s and 1990s, including, as you heard at the top of the show, a very brief clip from This Is Spinal Tap, also A Few Good Men, also Stand By Me, also When Harry Met Sally, The Princess Bride, Misery, and The American President, as referenced previously, along with many others. Also, his role as Meathead Michael Stivic in Norman Lear's 1970s TV classic All in the Family alongside Carol O'Connor's Archie Bunker catapulted him to fame, won him 2 Emmy Awards. He was the son of comedy legend Carl Reiner as well, creator of the Dick Van Dyke Show. And the horrific news on Sunday came just one day, by the way, after Dick Van Dyke celebrated his 100th birthday. We were celebrating that, frankly, over the weekend. One of the channels had 100 episodes of Dick Van Dyke.
I know.
And we were watching that, and they weren't even through the 100th episode of that when this horrific news about Carl Reiner's son, came across the proverbial wires at this point.
Carl Reiner, Rob Reiner's father, was the driving force, was the creator of
the Dick Van Dyke Show,
which was actually, I think, loosely based on Carl Reiner's own life as a TV producer, TV comedy writer,
with your
TV
show
host.
Of shows with Sid Caesar. But now I'm really dating myself here.
Well, it's just classic TV, and
indeed.
It was a family that the Reiner family has had such an outsized impact on American culture.
Yep.
I mean, it really can't be, just Rob Reiner alone, his impact is hard to describe. And just one, I mean, legend doesn't even cover it.
Relatives of Norman Lear, another legend, the legendary producer of All in the Family, who died back in 2023, his relatives said they were bereft by the news on Sunday. Norman, quote, Norman would have wanted to remind us that Rob and Michelle spent every breath trying to make this country a better place, and they pursued that through their art, their activism, and their philanthropy, and their love for family and friends. L.A. Mayor Karen Bass called Reiner's death a devastating loss for the city. Rob Reiner's contributions reverberate through American culture and society, she said in a statement, and he has improved countless lives through his creative work and advocacy fighting for social and economic justice. Indeed, beyond his work as an artist, which I'm sure many fondly recall from his, his turn as Meathead to his hit after hit after hit in one genre after another, one film genre after another. Reiner had an extraordinary impact in American politics. Among the reactions, frankly, that caught my eye late on Sunday night on social media as this shocking news was just breaking, Adam B. Vary, a journalist, wrote, quote, Rob Reiner was one of the perennials, a force in TV and then film and then politics and Los Angeles life for decades and decades. He was the quintessence of bleeding heart liberal Hollywood in the best sense of the word, said Vary, adding, may his memory be a blessing. Phil Noble Jr., the editor-in-chief of horror film fan magazine Fangoria, remember, Rob Reiner made a horror film as well in Misery. Classic film, based on a Stephen King story. Noble said Rob Reiner made some great movies, but he was also unafraid to speak the truth and was one of the public voices who knew you don't squander your platform and only got louder about opposing evil as he got older. Legend, added Phil Noble. Rick Hassin, a name you may be familiar with. He is frequently cited on this program as an election law scholar. He now teaches over at UC Irvine out here in Southern California. He wrote, quote, Rob Reiner was a true patriot, a champion of democracy who understood the risks that we face and strove to ensure that future generations of Americans would live in a free country. May his memory be a blessing, noted Hassin. Our friend and occasional guest on this program, Law Dork's Chris Geidner, reminded, quote, Rob Reiner was one of the key people behind the effort to go to court to overturn California's anti-marriage equality Proposition 8 back when it passed back in 2008. Working with Chad Griffin, they founded the American Foundation for Equal Rights and got both Republican Ted Olson and Democrat David Boies to team up to successfully fight Prop 8 all the way to the Supreme Court.
So Rob Reiner, you know, did more than many Hollywood stars may have an opinion about politics. They may speak out about it one way or another. Rob Reiner, whether you agreed with his politics or not, he actually took action on his political views. He took action on that view on those views. He organized behind it. He put money behind it. You know, it should be noted that while some, you know, viewed the sort of the classically liberal Reiner as a political opponent or disagreed with his views. And by the way, the president of the United States today, I believe, made some horrific comments, which I don't even think I'm going to share here, frankly, because they were so grotesque and so horrific. And I would just note that had anyone made similar comments following the death of Charlie Kirk just a few weeks back. Had you just replaced the name, Rob Reiner with Charlie Kirk in what Donald Trump tweeted out on Monday, those folks would have been fired from their jobs immediately. And probably under this Trump administration, thrown in jail in the bargain. In fact, 600 people were in fact fired because of what they said following the death of Charlie Kirk. Anyway, I've said a whole lot there that I was hoping to not bring your attention to what the president said, but too late there. But boy, anyway, whether you agreed with Reiner's politics or not, he didn't just advocate or play partisan politics. He used his platform and his resources to take action, to get things done that he believed in. And I have great respect for that. He's largely, for example, the reason that a program called First Five exists out here in California, a program created by tax revenue on tobacco products via Proposition 10, which was funded in no small part by Reiner himself and others who he had rallied in support of that measure some years ago, investing tobacco tax revenues into early childhood development, focusing on children from the prenatal to age five. It funds local county commissions to support health, education, family services with the goal that young children might enter school healthy and ready to learn. You probably didn't know that. Even those of us here in California probably didn't know about so much that Reiner did in addition to his legendary career as a director. One of the many, and an actor and a writer and everything else, one of the many quotes I saw from Reiner himself as reposted by others last night, quote, "Silence in the face of authoritarianism is complicity. Speaking out is a patriotic act," he said. "Democracy does not defend itself," he said. "It requires participation, vigilance, and courage from ordinary people." And well, I didn't share all of his, of Rob Reiner's political positions on that one. Boy, was he on the money. And it's something that we need to keep in mind as we move into the new year. I'm sure we will be learning more about this horrific tragedy in the days ahead and what may have triggered Reiner's son, who had a history of problems with drugs and had made a film with his father, actually based on his own efforts to get clean. But I was moved by many recollections of Reiner's work on social media on Sunday night, even by many who said they disagreed with his politics as well, but had watched his films over and over and over again, or that one of them had changed their lives, etc., that I thought I would try to open the phones today to the community here in Los Angeles for those who might want to ring in, for those who might have worked with Reiner or simply had thoughts on his passing today. My timing and everything is sort of all off, so my apologies for that due to our technical problems in the studio, but our phone number is 818-985-5735. That is our phone number if you would like to ring in on that or anything else on the stories we covered today, or as I had originally hoped, well, your thoughts at the end of this grim year as we head into what I see as a hopeful new year. A year of change ahead, even as no doubt there is still going to be a lot of darkness and struggle and pain
as we head toward the light of a better day, the light at the end of the tunnel, the light that I am always aware, Desi always reminds me, could be an oncoming train. But I hope
true. That's
not the case here.
You never know.
818-985-KPFK is our phone number if you are in our live Southern California listening area, or for those listening anywhere around the globe on our kpfk.org web stream. Please give us a call. All right, let me get straight to the phone. When you call in, hit button number one because we're in Fun Drive here. Let me go to Linda in Colorado. Hey, Linda, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, wow. Thanks. I'm getting a little feedback. Is that normal?
Sorry about that. No, it shouldn't be, but anything could happen here. We turned it down a bit. Is that any better for you there, Linda?
That's great.
There we go. Okay.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Long time, first time. I love your show. I love everything that you do. So
thank you, Linda.
Thanks for being there.
You bet. What's on your mind? Anything in particular above and beyond that today?
Yeah, I've been wanting to call in. I've been wanting to talk to various podcasts that I listen to about Refuse Fascism, which is an organization that's trying to bring as many people to Washington, D.C. as possible to protest continuously. They're having, it seems like, pretty creatively organized protests, and they seem to be, to me, to be right on. They're talking about exactly what needs to happen. Trump must go now. That's their number one demand. Oh, boy, I'm getting feedback.
Oh, sorry about that. We'll try to turn it down a little bit. Nothing we could do, Wendell is telling me right now. But I will point folks towards Refuse Fascism at refusefascism.org. Their website notes, we the people must act together, united for one demand. Trump must go now. Well, there's an idea. Thank you, Linda. I appreciate that call. I appreciate those nice comments, and I appreciate you drawing our attention to that. My apologies for the feedback as we're wrestling through these weird tech problems today. For a change, what do you know? Anyway, thanks, Linda. I appreciate that, and we'll have them fixed next time you give us a call. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
And for the kind words, 818-985-5735. Let me go to, we'd love to hear from you. Call in, hit button number one, and we will go to Eric in Los Angeles. Hey, Eric, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
How are you doing? Thank you. I just wanted to say that it's very sad with the drug problems that's taking place across America.
Yep.
As well as the violence that's coming from those drugs. There's a word that no one never talks about. You never hear it on the media. It's called akathisia. Akathisia is where people who use drugs, it's the side effects. And one of the side effects of akathisia is suicidal ideation as well as homicidal ideation. And when we hear about these tragedies where children are killing their parents and parents are killing their children, we really need to take this word akathisia and make it where the world can know exactly what that word effort means and how it does affect the central nervous system of those who use drugs.
Mm.
It's a part of the withdrawal, and people literally lose their minds.
Mm. All right. Well, akathisia, it's a word I've never heard of, and while you were talking, I looked it up. It looks like it's defined as a movement disorder marked by an intense inner restlessness and uncontrollable need to move, most often linked to certain medications such as antipsychotics. I don't know if that played a role here, but something was obviously amiss. Nick Reiner, Rob Reiner's son, has struggled with drug issues for many years over his life, homelessness and so forth. Apparently back, I want to say about 10 years ago, they got together when Nick had supposedly been clean to make a film, a fictional film, but based on the relationship between a young man and his father, as I understand it, and it was directed by Rob Reiner. It was actually written by, or co-written at least, by Nick Reiner. At the time, they said that the project itself was very therapeutic, and Nick was believed to be clean at the time, but apparently something went horribly wrong. Eric, I really appreciate the call, sir. Thanks for checking in. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Our lines are available if you'd like to ring in now. If you got any, you know, favorite Rob Reiner moments, thoughts to share. I will say that we watched Spinal Tap 2, The End Continues,
yes,
on Sunday night on HBO Max. Sort of another coincidence with, you know, Dick Van Dyke turning 100 over the weekend. Also over the weekend, Spinal Tap 2 was released for streaming on HBO Max. And it was, you know, just released there this weekend, just prior to the murder of Rob Reiner and his wife out here in Brentwood, about a mile or so from where O.J. Simpson's wife, Nicole, and her friend Ron Goldman were murdered back in 1994. Not a lot of murders in Brentwood, but, well, there's two iconic ones at this point for you. The Spinal Tap sequel, I thought, was pretty funny. Frankly, though, it was no comparison to the 1984 classic.
True.
Which, while it did not invent Spinal Tap, the original one did not invent, as I understand it, the mockumentary genre, the mockumentary format. In fact, it is sort of credited with popularizing and perfecting it. It really did perfect it. If you haven't seen Spinal Tap, do yourself a favor. Go watch the original one. From 1984, and according to film experts, like I said, they're the ones who said that that Rob Reiner sort of perfected the format. It also served as Reiner's very, very first feature film as a director.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And by the way, I have seen reports of the past few hours while all of this has been unfolding and the nation has been trying to make sense of it, I guess, along with me. Reiner was said to have been working on a multi-part documentary film, a real one, not a mockumentary, but a documentary, along with the working title The Spy and His Asset, which is or was supposedly to cover the lives of Russian President Vladimir Putin and his asset, Donald Trump. I hope that someone finishes that documentary in the absence of Rob Reiner and his tragic absence at this point. But boy, it would be great to hear it, to see that film. It was supposed to be something like 10 to 13 parts. I don't know how many parts are done. I don't know when it was supposed to come out. But presumably he was working with someone on that production, and hopefully that continues. Just a reminder, writes Mark Joseph Stern, our friend, the legal eagle over at Slate. At least 600 Americans were fired for failing to show sufficient respect after Charlie Kirk's murder. Fired, suspended, punished, disciplined. And this is not at all a complete list. He says Kirk fans identified thousands of people who expressed their views in an insufficiently respectful way and urged their employers to take action against them. Mark notes, we'll probably never know the true number, but do keep that in mind if you do happen to see part or all of Donald Trump's appalling tweet in response to what happened on Sunday. Rob Reiner, back in September, I believe it was, early September, was on a podcast or on perhaps MSNBC on the Ali Velshi show. Wendell, do we have that audio nearby? Here's a little bit of what Rob Reiner had to say. And again, while I don't agree with all of his politics, I do agree with some of it, and including some that you'll hear right now.
This is just the beginning, and people have to understand our democracy is being taken away from us, and we only have about a year. You know, just to be clear about this. And people, you know, you're doing a great job and a lot of other people are doing a good job to tell people what is actually happening in this country. But make no mistake, we have a year before this country becomes a full-on autocracy and democracy completely leaves us. And we're looking at the election in 2026. And Donald Trump knows, he knows that in a free and fair election, he will lose. He will lose the House. The House will flip and will become into Democratic hands. There'll be committee chairs that'll be able to hold hearings. And this is the last thing he wants. So this little, these ICE agents and the National Guard, and now he's called the military in from all over the world to talk to them about, don't be surprised when polling booths are surrounded by American mm-hmm. military in the guise of making sure that the elections are fair and that right. nobody's tampering with anything. And when you see violence breaking out, which there'll be protests, there'll be inciting violence, there'll be some violence, and they'll keep back. Then you'll see the commandeering of voting machines, ballot boxes, to make sure that that election is secure. Well, what that means is that he will then commandeer the election. So we have to make the public absolutely aware that their democracy is being taken from them. And we have to do everything we can to make sure people understand that. People don't, it's a vague term, democracy. It's like, yep. what does that mean? The Constitution, we don't know what that means. People care about their pocketbook issues, the price of eggs, they care about their health care, and they should. Those are the things that directly affect them. But if they lose their democracy, all of these rights, the freedom of speech, the freedom to pray the way you want, the freedom to protest and not go to jail, not be sent out of the country with no due process, all these things will be taken away from yep. them. And we have to educate the public that this is what's happening right now in America.
That was Rob Reiner just a few weeks ago with Ali Velshi warning about what he sees as the possibility of the election being essentially commandeered next year, and that people need to wake up to the possibility of that happening, noting that, oh, we have just about a year's time to make sure democracy does not disappear entirely in this country. And I will note that it is up to we the people. If you were confused about what he was saying, that the military would come out and seize voting machines, seize polling places under the guise of protecting the election. Now, I don't know whether they will do that, but I don't think the people of the United States are going to much stand for that. At least I hope they won't. Because this is not a popular president, and I think people are beginning to get on to what he is doing and what he is calling for, and the threat that he himself, the Donald Trump himself, poses to this nation, to this Constitution, and to democracy itself. 818-985-5735. Let me go to Randy in Huntington Beach. Hey, Randy, thanks for calling into the broadcast. Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can hear you now. I didn't actually know Rob, but I met him once.
Yeah.
And he was a genuinely decent human being. He was standing in line to get into the Groundling Theater. And we spent about 20, 25 minutes joking and talking. And he didn't want to talk about upcoming projects. He wanted to say he just wanted to watch some of the comedians he was getting ready to cast. Mm. And it was just like hanging out with somebody that I knew for 20 years. He was just a decent human being. I really enjoyed the conversations, and I'm sure it was such a nothing in his life, he wouldn't have ever remembered it.
But for you, it was certainly memorable. How long ago was that, Randy?
Oh, that was at least 15 years ago, and you compare and contrast that personality with somebody like Donald Trump, and, you know, he was a mensch. You know, Rob Reiner was just the kind of person you'd want as a decent human neighbor, you know?
Yeah. No, he really was. He really was. And like I said, you know, even I, and I'm on certainly on the same side of the spectrum of the political spectrum as him, even I didn't agree with him on, well, a number of political issues. But man, do I appreciate that he was right on the money that he, you know, put himself, his work, his platform, and yes, his own personal resources behind what he believed. And didn't ask for a lot in return, never ran for public office, was not out there, raising funds for himself. He had his own projects where he could do that, and they turned out to be projects that all entertained us at the same time. So, yeah, a good guy, an American tragedy, frankly, on Sunday night.
I'm trying to remember, yeah. Was he Opie on Andy Griffith as well?
He was not Opie. You're thinking of Ron Howard, who is still with us. He went on to be Richie Cunningham on Happy Days and also an iconic American director. That said, let me play a little 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon with you here. Rob Reiner was married to Penny Marshall. Penny Marshall played Laverne on Laverne and Shirley, which was a spinoff from Happy Days, which starred Ron Howard. Richie Cunningham was also on The Andy Griffith Show. All on CBS, by the way, which also aired All in the Family some years later. There you go. How's that, Randy?
That was excellent. Nice tying it together. And a couple of those shows were in Milwaukee, Laverne and Shirley, which is where I grew up.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, it did take place in Milwaukee, as did Happy Days, until, of course, Laverne and Shirley moved to California for some reason, and at the same time, for some reason, their neighbors, Lenny and Squiggy, came with them. Lenny was played by, now I'm screwing up the name. Do we have it? Oh, man. Anyway, one of the guys who stars, not Christopher Guest, but the other one who stars in This is Spinal Tap, and This is Spinal Tap 2, directed by by Rob Reiner. There you go. Thanks, Randy. Appreciate the trip down memory lane there. I don't know, even know if we have any more time for it. 818-985.
Michael McKean.
Thank you,
Michael McKean. Michael McKean, who was in Spinal Tap and Laverne and Shirley.
You were too slow, and you had access to Google, and I had to keep talking the whole time to remember all of that.
Yes, you did. But I want to point out something that Randy said. I just want to underscore how.
Thanks for that call, Randy.
Yes, what a nice guy Rob Reiner was. I didn't ever meet him personally, but I have read so many people, normal walks of life, saying that they stumbled across him, crossed paths, and he was always an extremely nice person to him who actually did what he could with what he had to help the world. And it's such a contrast to Donald Trump and his absolutely classless, sociopathic statement about it all. It's just sad. But, that's where we are.
I'm afraid we have talked so much about that sociopathic statement that we've encouraged people to go look it up. But who am I kidding? I'm sure every mainstream media outlet out there is repeating it over and over again, no matter how horrific it is. Even apparently a bunch of Republicans said, dude, what are you doing? You're going too far. I mean, come on.
Well, I hope so.
Come on.
I hope somebody said something.
I hope
so, too. On the Republican side of
things. I hope so, too. By the way, before we get out here, this news breaking just in the last hour or so, something that we warned about last week on one of our broadcasts late in the week, as the rains were coming into to Washington State and the Pacific Northwest, officials have now ordered immediate evacuations in three South Seattle suburbs Monday after a levee failed following a week of heavy rains. As I said, we went into some of those rains on one of our broadcasts last week, affecting Seattle, much of Washington State, neighboring northern Oregon, and even into Idaho, prompting evacuations for tens of thousands as rivers are rising up there at record rates. So please be careful. One of the levees has now given way, and evacuation orders in King County, Washington State, covering homes and businesses east of the Green River in parts of Kent, Auburn, and Tukwila. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Flash flood warnings are still covering some 47,000 people in the region. So please be careful up there. I know we got a lot of listeners up in the Pacific Northwest, in Seattle, and elsewhere. All right, we got to get out. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, for getting us through this one. Thanks to our board operator, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. You can also reach me via email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com and on all the social medias, but especially Blue Sky, I am The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
All right. Very quickly, our timing is all off here, so I'm going to have to count on you guys. Give us a call at 818-985-5735 to become a member here at KPFK. Help us stay on your public airwaves. 818-985-5735. Donate $65 and get yourself a thank you gift in the form of a KPFK t-shirt or mug, or $100 for Tom Hartman's brand new book, hot off the presses, The Last American President, A Broken Man, A Corrupt Party, and A World on the Brink. If you're hearing our show via podcast later, go to kpfk.org and get all of those thank you gifts yourself. Please let them know that Brad sent you. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.